And good morning. Welcome to the morning show on 88.5 KRFY for this kind of cloudy, smoky Wednesday of August 30th, 2017. I'm one of your hosts for the morning show, Chris Bessler, and I'm here in the studio with my co-host.
And I'm Susie Perez. It's nice to be here, Chris, on this day in the last Wednesday of August.
Yeah, we're closing out August at one more day left, so... But we have a great show today.
Okay. Well, yes, we do. We have with us Sean Woodward. He's the superintendent of the school, Lake Ponderay School District number 84. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
And Geraldine Lewis, school trustee elected in 2015 and now board chair. Good morning, Geraldine.
Good morning, Susie. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. And we'll get into all things since school starts coming up a week from today.
September 5th.
There you go.
So that obviously is one of the biggest events of the year here in Sandpoint of anybody's, any community's calendar, I think. Mm-hmm. But first, let's talk about some of the other things going on around town, specifically the weather. And the weather is going to be pretty much more the same. We can expect a high today pushing 90 degrees. A low of 53. It's going to be hazy and smoky. There is a possibility for some scattered thunderstorms, which would, if they bring lightning, that'd be very bad news for us because our forests are so dry. On Thursday, the high will be 84. The haze is expected to clear somewhat and become more sunny. It's going to be mostly clear by Thursday night. And then on Friday, high of 85. Through the weekend, the highs are going to be high 80s to low 90s. It's going to be a stellar summer weekend to close out August and bring in September.
When they say haze, what do they mean by haze?
I think they mean smoke. Uh-huh. And, of course, we're getting smoke from fires chiefly in southern British Columbia. But there's a ton of fires as well in central Idaho. There's fires also in eastern Washington and Montana, all around us. We've been very fortunate ourselves to not have any fires right here in our locality.
And I wonder, I was talking with some people from Germany, and I'm wondering if, because we had such a great snowpack this last winter and a fairly wet spring, if that helped with some of the, you know, not having so many fires.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. Yeah. I mean, my guess would be, yeah, it has helped. I know we've had snow up in the high country until just recently. I think even some of the peaks may still have little bits of snow around them. So that is actually good news for our watersheds, and it probably does help in the fire situation as well. Other things going on around town. Schweitzer has a fall fest coming up this weekend. It actually starts Friday, runs through Monday. That's a big event for them. They've been doing it, I think, over 20 years. They have kids' activities, chairlift rides, and more than 100 microbrews and ciders in the village area. So that's a pretty fun thing happening all through the weekend. And then on Friday, we also have a big event happening right in town. It's the Rock Creek Alliance annual party. That's at Evans Brothers at the Granary District from 5 to 8 p.m. There'll be live music, food, libations, as we say. Mm-hmm. There'll be some raffles and opportunity to learn more about the Rock Creek Mine and the potential for impacts on our lake water quality.
And the important work that Rock Creek Alliance has been doing for the last almost, 25, 30 years to keep our water clean here in Lake Ponderay.
Yep.
Protecting us.
And, of course, there's a ton of other things going on around town this week. There always is in Sandpoint. There is going to be a Sandpoint History walking tour on Saturday. Folks doing that will meet in front of the Panda, and I believe did Steve Garvin come in?
Yep, and talk that was about yesterday. That?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you didn't catch that, that's on KRFY.org podcast. There's a Coaster Classic car show at Silverwood Theme Park. There's a Funky Junk Antique and Craft show happening at the fairgrounds Saturday and Sunday.
Well, I always like the midweek farmers market on Wednesday afternoon because I sometimes run out of whatever I'm hoping to have during the week in the vegetable department anyways. And so that farmers market is today from 3 to 6 p.m.
And of course, it happens again on Saturday morning, and there's a ton of produce.
A ton of food and people.
Yeah.
It's a very active market. Yeah. They always have live music, too.
Yeah. Well, they have that today as well, right? Live music at the afternoon farmer's market and the Saturday morning farmer's market. They actually closed down a block of Oak Street, and there's all kinds
crafters.
Of crafts and tents and fun happening. So that's a weekly event here. And you can see more about the community events on the calendar at krfy.org or sandpointonline.com, because there's far more happening in our town than we can ever cover in our meager little hour here. And with that, Susie.
Well, let's get started. And Sean Woodward, again, superintendent of the Lake Pend'Oreille School District number 84, school starting Tuesday next week, yes. September 5th. And what is coming up new this school year, and what do you have on your agenda right now? Anything parents need to know to get started in the new school year?
You bet. Probably the biggest thing, that question that we get at the district office is, how do I register my child for school, and what school does my child attend, and those kinds of things. So the main thing is that we want people to understand is that if you're not sure which school your child attends, to call our transportation department. And I'll give a number really quickly. That is 263-3522. And you might be surprised, you know, because sometimes we live in our own little bubbles, I guess, that we have a lot of new families moving into the area. While we have people moving out, we have new students registering every day. And this week is the biggest week as far as registration is concerned. We want to remind people to bring their immunizations, their up-to-date immunizations proof, as well as some people don't realize you need to have a birth certificate to register in the schools in the state of Idaho. We also have at all of our schools for the first time a full day kindergarten option. So a lot of our families still do not know that. At all 7 of our elementary schools, we run a full day program. It is pay to go at some of our schools, and some it is tuition free. So just call the district office if you want more information on that. Our district office phone number is 263-2184.
Can always get a lot of information about that. And calling the transportation department would give you a picture of what school to register at.
Exactly.
And that's 263-3522.
Yes.
Okay. And the full day kindergarten option, is that new this year?
Well, it's new at Washington Elementary and Sagal Elementary School. We've had it at the other 5 elementary schools, and we've been slowly expanding that. And this is our first year to have it in all 7 schools. We have at our rural schools where there's only 1 kindergarten option, that's Southside, Northside, and Hope. That is tuition free. And the reason we're able to do that, some parents wonder, well, how come we have to pay if we're in town? The reason is we adjusted our staffing at our small rural schools. We cut staff so that we can increase staffing at the kindergarten level. So you do not need to pay for it there. We've seen a pretty large uptick in our kindergarten registration over the last few years, our kindergarten enrollment, because there are so many families that tend to go private school in kindergarten because they want a full day option. Or they choose some other options. Another program that I'd like to real briefly mention is that a lot of homeschool families do not realize we have a homeschool academy now. Those are for part-time enrolled students. We have, last year we had roughly 5 or 6 students to start the school year. This year we'll start at around 70. So if you want more information about that, please contact the district office phone number, and we can get you all signed up for that particular program.
So I want to check those numbers. You started with 5 or 6 last year.
Yes.
And now you have 70.
Yes, we're really excited about that. So the need and the desire for that kind of programming is here in our community, and we're really happy because we knew that if we could build trust with our homeschool families, we could build an amazing school for those families as well. And our philosophy is definitely all of the kids in the community belong to all of us, and we want to support all families, and we're going to continue to expand as we learn more about what our stakeholders want and need to help educate their children.
That's also probably true for the private schools. There's a lot of interaction, especially in the sports arena, so to speak. That's a philosophy that really stands in our community, that they're all our children.
Yes.
One more question on the Homeschool Academy. What kinds of things does that offer to a homeschooling family?
Well, it's really amazing because we offer anywhere from, if you would like some support with traditional academics, mathematics, reading, science, we can do some tutoring kinds of opportunities. But probably the most popular part of it is our place-based learning options, where students are learning out in the field, where they're up at Schweitzer studying the local flora and fauna up there. They're out in the watershed, out in Clark Fork. But we also have one of our most popular classes right now, sign-up-wise, is Latin. Kids can learn Latin at our homeschool academy. They can also join a CrossFit class. So we have 40 students, I believe, right now enrolled in the Sandpoint CrossFit program. So it's very diverse, the offerings. And the nice thing about it is we basically work with the families and ask them, what do you want or need to have a more well-rounded education for your children? And what do you feel like you may not be able to offer at home? So it's very fluid. What we offer in the fall is very different than in the winter. The winter, we have one day a week that the students are up at Schweitzer skiing, doing snow science, and those kinds of opportunities as well.
So do you use local organizations to help with some of those extra programs?
We do, exactly. Another example would be we work with a music conservatory in town, and we utilize their space. They actually have a great kitchen there, so we operate a culinary arts program out of there, while at the same time students are doing instrumental music that is run by their staff members. So we do a lot of in-house instruction, but we also contract out for services.
Another thing, who is the administrator of this program?
Her name is Melinda Rossman.
Okay.
And, you know, it's realistically one of the most important jobs we do is hire the right people. The program would not have 70-plus people this year if we hadn't hired the right person in Melinda Rossman in that program. So mm-hmm. She's the one that really deserves a lot of credit for the explosion of the program.
I just want to shift back over to Chris Bessler for a moment. Chris, I think we should have Melissa Rossman in as a guest. I want to hear more about this homeschool academy.
Yeah, that's a whole topic unto itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But to shift gears back to the general school population, any other changes, Sean, that parents or kids should be looking for this school year?
So we don't have any major changes, but what I would like to share is a lot of times people do not have a great understanding of what we do offer, and that is something that I need to get better at as superintendent, making sure people know, and we all could do a better job of communicating. So I would like to say that we're pretty well known for our college track programs at our secondary level. People understand that we have a diverse array of dual credit options, advanced placement options for students. There's really no excuse for students that are college bound to not finish their high school career with at least a quarter of college done and paid for. The state of Idaho right now has a program called the 8 and 6 program, where really driven, interested students that know they're college bound can finish 2 years of college between the time they're in seventh grade through their senior year, all paid for by the state of Idaho. So that's great. It's pretty well known, those kinds of programs. What people do not realize is that we have so many career technical education opportunities in our schools as well. So we do have internships. We have career pathway programs. We have work-based learning programs. And just a couple of the classes that we're continuing to offer this year, we have in the career technical area, we have web design, accounting, computer applications, personal finance, health occupations. We have a whole slew of information systems technology kinds of courses, A+ certification, network certification. People wonder, what happened to the old shop programs? Don't we have shop anymore? Well, we do not have a broad shop carpentry kind of class. We're more in line with courses that there's a real direct route to careers. So we have welding 1, welding 2, welding 3, advanced welding certifications.
Actually working in the field.
Exactly, yes. 3D design, video game design. We have a whole array, Chris, you'll love this and you know this, of journalism and media technology courses that are available. And you probably saw the picture in the paper of the plane the students built. Mm-hmm. We have a phenomenal program, a partnership with an outside group for aerospace.
And that plane just about a little over a week ago took its initial maiden flight.
Yes, and it stayed in the air. We were really happy about that.
With students in it, probably.
No, students weren't in it.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, got to test it out first, but quite a program.
I have one question about your college track offering. Are these extra credits, these college credits, recognized by universities around the country?
I can use my own daughter, two of our daughters, as an example. So one of our daughters will graduate 2 quarters early in a school in Washington State, and every single credit transferred over for her. I know Geraldine has the same experience with her children as well. But our counselors are really good at working with our students and asking them, well, where do you think you'll go to school? Those kinds of things. What might work? What might not work for you? But most of them do. The AP classes, for sure, because it's more of a national program, advanced placement program. Dual credit programs, sometimes they do not transfer because dual credit programs are sponsored by a specific university, and it depends on the relationship that university has with other colleges.
But the high school counselors really have a key on that one.
They do,
They understand that process.
And there's a lot of students going over to, University of Montana, Montana State University, so they transfer in our location where most our students are. Those credits transfer very easily.
And that really equates to a lot of things. They're above the board on getting into college, but also it saves a lot of money
for
parents or the students. It's like a gigantic scholarship that they've earned by their work they're doing.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that's really cool.
So, Sean, what does enrollment look like this year? Are we up? Are we down?
So we never really know until we have the students in the seats, right? So, but right now, we were anticipating relatively flat enrollment. We have some interesting things happening at the high school level right now. We were anticipating roughly 260, I believe, freshmen. We have almost 300 freshmen. Not all of them have picked up their schedules yet, so they may or may not arrive on the first day, but that's a significant jump. And a lot of that is attributed to students we've never seen before that are just walking in.
You mean new families coming in?
New families.
Yeah. Oh,
which is encouraging.
Positive. Yeah.
Yeah. So thrilled about that. And then at the middle school level, we were anticipating about 250 students. We're at about 285.
Wow.
The elementary is a little harder for us to tell right now, but if we're, you know, we really hope we nailed our projections. If that's how we budget, it's a really good thing if we have more students than we anticipate, for sure. And maybe this will be the year that we actually do that.
And from a budgetary point, that's because you get funding from the school based on the number of students, right?
Exactly. Yes. And we have a very interesting state in that we're funded on average daily attendance. Most states in the United States are funded in an enrollment-based. If they're enrolled, you receive funding. So it's a very different model. But in some ways, I really appreciate it. In others, I'm not sure it's a great system.
How does that actually work, average daily attendance? Do you take attendance over a period of time and do an average?
Basically, yes, and it's most heavily weighted in the first 9 weeks of school. So there are some communities that, for whatever reason, they tend to receive more students as the year progresses, and they're penalized. We don't really see a big difference in that in our school district.
So in other words, the number that you eventually come up with that average daily attendance that gives you your funds for each student, so to speak, is pretty close to the enrollment that you have.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of new things, let's bring Geraldine Lewis, our new board chair, into the conversation.
Thank you. I've been quiet over here listening to everything Sean has to share.
So, Geraldine, you have a brand new board. Actually, not totally brand new, but you have three new board members.
And Pearlie Decker and I are virtually new with 2 years experience each. And it's exciting. We have a great board. You know, three of them just came on in July, sworn in as new trustees. And that's exciting. Gary Supergur is zone two and Lonnie Williams is zone three. Carrie Kelly's zone five here in Sandpoint. And it's exciting. We did a board training with all five of us and Superintendent Woodward, and that was extremely helpful. I don't think people realize that in this elected position, there is a large amount of Idaho code that you have to follow. There's rules and responsibilities that come along with it, and we learned so much. It was really great.
Hey, where is that conducted?
We held it over at the school district.
In the main office.
Yep, in the main office on August 8th. It was right before our scheduled monthly meeting, so it timed in very well. But we went over basically those roles and responsibilities that I talked about, or that are all Idaho code. But we also talked about effective boards and what those qualities look like, and how to run effective meetings, and the board superintendent relationship. It's not easy just stepping into that position. There's only five trustees, and we have a lot of responsibility. You know, it's a big district. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to learn about it. So,
just briefly, what is the scope of responsibility for a board member of a school board?
It runs the entire gamut. I mean, just talking, you know, in the general way, obviously we approve the financing, the budget. But you have to provide for the basic education, the textbooks, supplies, the health of pupils. You have to look at the oversight of the entire, all the policies that are in place and oversight of all of that. You know, the hiring of the superintendent is probably the single most important thing. Sean referenced putting the right people in the right job. If we didn't have Superintendent Woodward, that would completely change the scope of what we're able to do. He's outstanding in that role. And that's one of the biggest jobs of the school board. You know, we don't do the day-to-day maintenance and running of the schools, but it's oversight of all of it.
So if something comes up in the district in the realm of, a questionable something, does the board hear about it? It's up to the superintendent to inform if something comes up.
Absolutely. And that's another part of that responsibility, that kind of chain of command you just referenced. It comes through the school itself, and then through that school's principal and administration up to the superintendent, and then the superintendent informs the board. And when there's decisions to be made, the board holds special meetings.
Yeah. One thing I noticed on the website at lposd.org is there's a whole board section, and once minutes are approved, they're available for anyone to read. The schedule of your meetings is there. So there's, how would you say in your 2 years so far, the level of transparency is?
Well, it's funny. You just, one of the things we talked about are the four key components of governance, and this is across the board, but accountability, transparency, predictability, and participation. And we talked about those, and transparency is one of the biggest things because, you know, there's a lot of constituents here. Everybody has input on education and how their money is being spent. And so they really need to have access to all of that. And you're right. If you go on the website, you can watch the videos of every single meeting. You can read the minutes of every meeting. We try and be very open. But the funny thing about a school board is, it is a meeting held in public, not a public meeting. So that's a little different for people to understand. It's not, you know, a come in open forum sort of back and forth dialogue. Our meetings are held in public so that the public can come in and be aware of what decisions are being made. And there would be a few times that throughout the year there are content areas where we do want to hold a public forum, and we want the community to come and weigh in and all have dialogue. So it's definitely different. It's a learning process for this new board, but they are so skilled. Everybody brings a different you know, set of experiences to this table, and I'm very excited.
And I want to remind our listeners, if you just tuned in, this is the morning show on 88.5 KRFY with hosts Chris and Susie, and we're talking this morning with Geraldine Lewis. She's the chair of the Lake Pend'Oreille School District Board of Trustees, as well as Sean Woodward. He's the superintendent of schools. And to follow up that last point you were making, how many citizens just typically show up at a school board meeting?
They're not the most popular meetings out here. Maybe 20. We have a lot of school administrators who come, especially if they're going to present some content to us. Principals come. Maybe 20 community members. Now, when we're having meetings that we're discussing budget issues, we may get some more special interest groups show up, and that's great because we certainly find out how the communities, you know, what they're interested in and how they feel about certain things just by who comes to the meetings. So it's all videoed, so everybody can watch it at home.
Can see it. Everybody's welcome to
come. Is it live streamed?
It's not live streamed, but it's uploaded by the next morning.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to see, you hold it in different locations around the district, or
we don't right no. now. Right now, we're holding it out at the Pend'Oreille Event Center every time, just for consistency's sake. Especially now that we're videoing it.
Oh, I see. Yes.
You need microphones and you need a setup, so we hold it there every time, and that makes it easier for the public to attend, also.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much all new board, and it might be early to say this, but can we expect any new directions to be coming from the board?
I wouldn't say new directions, but I know this board is interested in learning at all aspects of it. You know, the financial is probably, it's a big responsibility. Also, I know that this board's going to look at what sort of long-range goals we have for facilities. We haven't gotten into those sort of discussions yet, just because we've only had an August meeting altogether. So that's been, it's all new. I know that long-range plan we talked about will be one of the focuses of this board.
There's a lot to talk about just in that one little subject. But what do you think, Chris? Time for a...
Give our guests a little breather here. Yeah.
I just also want to remind our listeners that we are recording this interview today, and if you want to hear it later because you're on your way to work right now and you can't hear the rest of it, you can go to krfy.org, and it will be up as a podcast under podcast.
Yeah, click on the podcast links. But for the moment, we're going to take a few-minute break here. We're going to play a song that Susie queued up. From The Who, I Can See for Miles.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of appropriate. We want to see for miles,
the way the smoke situation is. And according to the National Weather Service, tomorrow the smoke should lift some. So we're going to hear this. We'll be back in just a minute. Please stay with us.
And that was The Who from 1969, I Can See for Miles and Miles. And you're listening to The Morning Show on this Wednesday, August 30th, with Chris and Susie. And we're here in the studios with Geraldine Lewis. She's the school trustee board, the local public school district, 84, Lake Pend'Oreille School District, 84, and Superintendent Sean Woodward. And we're talking all things public school this day.
And you do have a pretty big project underway right now. It's a strategic planning process. You're calling it the Vision 2023 strategic planning process. Why 2023? And tell us what that's about, please.
Well, that's 5 years out, roughly, once we get the plan completed. And one of my favorite quotes of all time is, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. And I've seen so many systems and organizations jump from one thing to another thing without, and sometimes they're conflicting interests without really getting anywhere. So we strongly believe that we need to have a strategic plan for the future. And we, I have not, which I will do at the second school board meeting in September, describe a process that I will be recommending to the board as far as how do you develop a strategic plan for the future. And some of the things that we need to do on the front end of this is we need to really spend a lot of time assessing our current reality so we can have fact-based discussions about where we're at. A lot of people will jump straight into a planning process without fully understanding where are we really at and what are some of the root causes or influences on our current conditions. So we're going to spend a lot of time assessing our current reality so that when we go out and get feedback from the general public, we can do a true fact-based state of the schools before we get input.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be the first process that we would go through. We will be looking at both quantitative data as well as qualitative data. You know, how do people feel about our schools, survey data, things like that. What we will be doing initially is developing a steering committee. This is what I'll recommend to the board, that we have 10 to 12 people on a steering committee that will be made up mostly of the people that are going to have to do the work. That's of critical importance. Now, the next part is we will be going out and getting feedback. This is where the community comes in. We need to fully understand, not from the 20 people who attend our school board meetings, that they would be included in the process, but we need to have a much broader representation of our stakeholder base to get feedback around a couple of things. One of them would be, what do people believe that we're doing well? And that's why it's important to be able to share our current reality. And then what should we, what requires some immediate and also long-term attention? You know, what could we be doing differently and be doing better to get better results for our students? So that is where we would have focus groups, we would conduct interviews, we would have community forums, those kinds of things, and would also have a survey going out to reach people that could not or do not feel comfortable attending forums. Now, as we gather that information, we would be bringing that back through the steering committee and back through our school board and start to develop a draft strategic plan. Now, the part that I would be most excited about a process like this would be most of the feedback on strategic plans is received at the front end. What I'll present to our board is that once we have a draft plan, we go back out to those very stakeholder groups, say, we heard your feedback. We believe we've captured what you believe are big priorities for our school district moving forward the next 5 years. Do you think we got it right based on our 5-year plan? Then people can say, yes, it looks good. Or, you know, that's really not what we're saying, and that we could modify our plan and then circle back to the board and continue that work. So in a nutshell, that's the kind of work that we would be doing this school year. It's a good 7-8 month process.
Mm-hmm.
So Geraldine?
I just think it's exciting that this is starting. I also think that Sean does a great job of drawing the administrators into this conversation and having them understand why we're doing it, because you mentioned they're the ones who have to go out there then after this strategic plan's in place and do the work. Nuts.
So including the major stakeholders, the ones that will be implementing. I just was thinking as you were talking, Sean, where did you come up with kind of the, it sounds like a viable way to approach. Process is everything. Mm-hmm. If you don't know where you're going, you're not going to get there kind of thing. But where did you find this kind of template?
It's been from researching what other school districts have done, successful school districts and school systems and other systems. And then the general framework is coming out of a group called I believe it's called the District Management Council. It's a journal for educators, and they typically will come out and they want to do the work for you. They want to consult, and that won't happen.
and charge you fees.
Exactly. So my job will be to objectively facilitate the process, which I'm confident that I can do. And these public forums wouldn't be debates. They'd be listening tours, and we would be taking notes and not judging what people are saying about what their perceptions of the school district, but really listening and trying to make sense of it so that we can come up with 5 or 6 priorities for the next 5 years is what we'd be looking at.
Right. The good thing about that kind of a forum and feedback is there's no wrong answer. Everything is valuable input. So that's exciting.
And there are school districts that probably are models for this that have strategic plans that you're able to
exactly.
look at?
Exactly. Yes. And so we are in the process, our administrative team just had a two-day retreat, first time ever, that we spent two full days with each other to examine. What we're talking a lot about is we don't necessarily want to get into the trap of doing what's popular. We want to do what's proven. So too many times we grab onto these things that seem like, oh, let's do this, let's do that. And we get away from core principles and things that really work. So we really want to focus on doing what's proven. So that's exactly what we've been researching. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier, we were talking about enrollment and that it looks like enrollment might be up this year. But I imagine trying to project enrollment and student population out 5 years is going to be part of the trick of developing a plan to serve whatever size population we have.
Yeah, it's really a little bit of a ridiculous task at times because the experts, in my experience in 25 years doing this kind of work, I'm not sure we should pay the experts to come up with our enrollment projections. You know, I'll give an example. We were expected to have more of a downturn in our middle school numbers. Well, that's not happening. It's not happening. So you can look at economic indicators and economic influence and population trends. But what I believe is an even bigger factor is what are you doing in your school system to best reflect the needs of the families in our community? And because there are so many people in our community that choose not to attend public schools. So when you add programs, you adjust practices, you build trust with people, your population in the general community can remain flat, yet your enrollment in the school district can be on an upward trajectory.
Yeah. And in business terms, you gain market share.
Exactly.
Well,
yes.
Yeah. And, you know, a great example of that is the Homeschool Academy. It's just kind of blossomed because it's meeting the needs of the people and the word spreads that it's a great program. And then enrollment numbers change.
So one question that occurs, you're developing a five-year plan and probably it'll take you a good year to do that process. Yet we have a paradigm where we have a school board that changes up. You have a new election every couple of years, right? So
right.
How does the plan relate to maybe new school board members coming on that want to do something completely different?
Boy, that's such a good question, in my opinion. I'll let Geraldine hit that as well.
I'll throw in my little plug here that one of the important things we just learned is you don't come into a school board with a preconceived agenda or plan of your own. You really come in with an open mind with the interests of the students at heart. And so once this strategic plan for 5 years is laid out, new school board members can come on and kind of understand the big picture, kind of let go of their own agenda, so to speak, and start to embrace this overall long-range plan. It makes for a lot more continuity.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully those individuals that are interested in running for the school board get involved in the whole planning process as well, as citizens even.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we hope that to be true. And I've lived in communities where you have people that run on specific platforms that do get elected and that it does make it more difficult for a school district to move forward if you have one person out of five or sometimes out of seven that really is not in line with some of the previous planning that the previous board has done. I feel really fortunate that right now this is a great time to do a five-year plan because we have a relatively new board.
New board and everyone is excited, eager for, you know, a vision.
When it really brought something to mind. You know, if someone is running for a school board position, it's because they support the school's mission. And as you said, Geraldine, you know, the students is the bottom line or the top line. So someone coming in with a personal agenda that does not meet the mission. So if you're a voter, you can kind of ask, you know, do you support the mission and the vision of this public education in our community?
I think that most people who run for this job realize it's a public service and that, you know, it's done out of a need to improve your community. And I couldn't be happier with those people who've been elected. They really represent their community well, and they have really altruistic goals for improving education. So it should mm-hmm. be a good 2 years.
So in the process of doing the a 5-year plan, and this is a little bit fortuitous because I have a 1-year anniversary today, the failure of the plant facility levy last August 30th. And it kind of went down in flames by a pretty healthy margin. It was a very ambitious levy. It was to develop some completely new schools and to do district-wide improvements, trying to deal with all the facility needs in one fell swoop, more or less. But those needs still exist. So I'm sure you guys have already about this, and it's going to be a big part of the planning. But what is what's the posture going forward on the plant facility levy?
Well, the good news, in my opinion, is there was a lot of fear last August 30th that there would be more severe ramifications of that big of a defeat when it came to our regular instructional levy in March. People thought, boy, you've lost a lot of confidence in people. And the good news is, I think we had the second highest passage ever of our supplemental levy in March. So that told us a story right there, with extremely high levels of voter turnout in March as well, just mm-hmm. like our plant facility levy, that the message was, hey, no, when you put something out there that we understand and we believe in, we'll get behind it. And we see what you're saying with the instructional levy. We're not quite sure with the plant facility. So I think it's critical right now that, I mean, we have the same needs, that they're still there.
Yeah.
We're on kind of a maintenance. I mean, we're in a maintenance right now. We're not doing a lot of proactive work because we do not have the funds from a facility standpoint. But what I like about this strategic process that we will go through is, what will people say should be our priorities in the next 5 years? Will facilities come up? And if it does come up, obviously, we will be coming up with another plan for the future. And that doesn't mean necessarily 5 years out. It means it's a mm-hmm. five-year plan. Vision 2023 could be, we have a renovated or modernized school project done, right? But what we'll have on the front end this time is what we didn't have on the front end last time, and that is a lot of community input first.
And I think you hit on one community feeling ambitious. It was a kind of one big bite, and it was too much for that majority of voters. And I think that with this longer range plan, where things are in smaller increments and people can see the overall plan but approach it in smaller bites, the community will feel more accepting and understanding of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the plant facility levy last year was a little bit of trying to give every school a little something, and some couple of major projects. One of them was to rebuild the middle school. That's probably the biggest piece of that.
Right.
In the meantime, do we have any facility problems that are really urgent that need to be fixed, that you need to deal with?
Well, there's nothing that right now, you know, that is catastrophic by any means, because our buildings aren't condemned. There are things that could happen, just like that's very expensive. Example, a boiler going out or something like that. I mean, when you have aging facilities, it's not if, it's when. Something will happen that will cost a lot of money.
We're
just not sure which part of the facility will be impacted. But nothing that we're saying, hey, our schools are unsafe, they're unfit for students to be in. We're concerned about air quality, mm-hmm. for sure.
In the schools, yes.
We are, and that's something that, again, it's not a long-range health problem for our students. I want to be clear about that. But air quality does impact the ability to concentrate and things like that. So we are looking at some short-term solutions right now. We'll be spending some time this fall thinking, okay, is there anything that we can do as kind of a Band-Aid in some of the schools?
Mm-hmm. Conversation last August about the plant facility levy and then the supplemental levy again in the spring, it brought up a kind of a common refrain, and that is the funding formula for schools in Idaho is relying so heavily on on now override levies and property owners. Is there any prospect that the state will provide more funding?
So there's one thing that is a misconception. I'd come back and speak on this at another date, is that the problem isn't necessarily at the state level. And studying this now for a couple of years, the problem is that in many states, as a local property owner, you're required to pay a certain percentage towards schools. That isn't the local share is one of the lowest in the U.S. The state share is actually not the lowest in the U.S. Our per pupil amount that we spend on students is one of the lowest.
Like 49th or 50th?
Yes. Yeah. But the state always gets beat up on it. And in studying that further, it's really the local property tax share is far lower than in any other state. And it's because you're not required. There's non-voter approved dollars that goes towards schools in other states on your property assessment or your taxes that you see.
But to clarify, that is a change that has to be made at the state level.
Trustee Lewis is exactly right.
That is not something that locally we have control over. Yeah. By that I mean we still go out for voter approval on taxable real estate. Yeah, and that's schools.
And that's exactly right. I'm glad Geraldine brought this up because we have to figure out what would be a viable solution. And it's not, hey, we want more money from the state. What's the root cause of some of the problems? And specifically ask, can we look at something like non-voter approved support for schools? It's not going to, some people will not, you know, I'm not popular with a large group of people. I understand that maybe probably lost a few people there too, but in reality, that's one of our problems that we face.
And is that so that you don't have to go to the voters every 2 years to get a supplemental levy passed? Or that's about?
It would just change the funding balance that most schools in this state start with. I don't know what it would mean specifically and individually because we haven't even been able to consider it. But it's a law at the state level. So we are all working within the confines of what we are able to do. And it means going in front of the voters every 2 years, which has actually helped us in our communication. We need to get out in front of the community and share what we're doing and exactly what our budget looks like. That's a positive thing. But like Superintendent Woodward said, the issue is statewide on how real estate taxation
is
done.
So is there a legislator who's going to dig in on this? Do you know of? Have you identified one that could carry the torch?
You know, the unfortunately is, not yet, but maybe in November. But the thing is, a lot of people have given up. I can hardly get superintendents to rally around. Oh, we've tried that. Nobody really listens, and we can't have that attitude. The other piece that hurts us is other states actually have, and this is a state issue, matching funds when you're building schools. So the onus isn't as heavy on the local property tax owner,
right.
But the state could kick in. And the last little thing I'll say is two-year levies. We would be much better off if we could at least have 3-year voter-approved levies.
Because it costs money
to put
on
the levy. And that's at the state level also. We can't change that decision here. But you're right. It would.
Well, what does it take to do that? Is there any kind of statutory limitation on override levies?
So we can only, by law, 1 or 2 year levies. That's it. And so we could lobby for our legislators for a 3-year or 4-year term like most states allow. Mm-hmm.
That seems like that'd be a lower bar, threshold to meet with the legislature as far as making a change.
Exactly.
Yeah. Might be a good starting point.
Well, we are going to be running out of time in just a moment here.
Yeah, and I just wanted to ask if Geraldine Lewis, board chair, and Sean Woodward, superintendent of our Lake Ponderay School District number 84, have any final words they'd like to shout out to teachers, families, and students.
I will say very briefly, we just have an outstanding district, and I cannot say enough about the teachers in this district. Their commitment and dedication to the students is top-notch. So no matter what happens financially, or those teachers give their all every single day, and I'm so proud of them.
I would totally agree with Trustee Lewis about our staff is absolutely incredible. The other piece is we want to get better, and we will get better. And if you have ideas or thoughts, I'm always just a phone call away, and I'll meet you for coffee. I'll even buy you a cup of coffee. If you have ideas or thoughts about our district moving forward, please give us a call at the district office.
Go ahead and throw that number out.
263-2184.
And any last minute words for the new school year coming up that starts Tuesday on the 5th?
We cannot wait to see the students. And probably one of my favorite parts is kindergarten and first grade. The parents crack me up because you go out to the buses. The kids ride the bus to school. The parents drive their cars and they videotape their kids as they're getting off the bus. And many of them are crying when they do
so. That's only kindergarten and first grade. By yes. Sixth grade, the parents are asking us, how soon can my kids come to school?
Yeah, we can't wait to see everybody.
All right. Well, it's going to be a great school year, I'm sure. And we have just a few minutes left here. I want to mention that tomorrow's morning show, that's the Thursday, August 31st edition with hosts Jim Healy and Jack Peterson. They're going to be talking with high school glee club students. So that'll be kind of connected to what's coming up here just next week with the start of school.
They actually have a raffle for a car. They're going to also kind of promote that raffle a little bit.
Nice.
1986 Ford Pinto, I think, isn't it?
Oh, I needed one of those. I was hoping to get one.
I'm only kidding.
You better be kidding.
The Ford Pinto.
They'll have to pay people to take those raffle tickets.
That's right.
And then next Tuesday, the morning show with hosts Julie Calamine and Phil Huff, they'll be talking to Kathleen St. McClair McGee. She's with American Heritage Wildlife Foundation. That'll be a fascinating show as well. They're doing great work in wildlife rescue. And with that, Susie.
Just want to thank our guests, Geraldine Lewis and Sean Woodward. Thank you so much for coming in. And you know you are always welcome. Just give us a call if you have something you want to share with the KRFY listeners.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And we're going to go out with a song that we pulled because of all the events in Houston and the flooding. This is Bridge Over Troubled Water with Simon and Garfunkel. And please have a great and safe week yourselves.
Yeah, have a beautiful day. Thank you.